There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, I'm Claire from Wild Ginger Running, the trail and ultra running YouTube channel, and this is the podcast version of my weekly live chat with an athlete, coach, or other running expert. The link to the original film on YouTube is in the show notes. Check out my Instagram and YouTube channel for more training advice, inspiration, and gear reviews. Everything is Wild Ginger Running, and my blog is wildgingerrunning.co.uk. Support me on Patreon if you enjoy this free advice at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Enjoy this podcast and see you next week for more.
Good evening.
Hello.
And welcome to the final official Scotney Wild Ginger takeover. Yes, this is the final of the official one. We might have some news at the end of what is happening in April. But how are we doing, Jen?
Yeah, all right, thanks.
Actually, you didn't look so shocked this time. I asked that question.
Well, you don't ask me how I am. You ask me what I've been up to, and I'm like, just same old.
Lockdown. But hey, you know, we can now start meeting up, and we are able to kind of start doing kind of stuff outside, aren't we, I think?
Because we're so sociable and run with so many people.
We do. We hope you're all well. If you're joining us live this evening, good evening, Ruth, already joining us live. And have we got a guest tonight for the final official Scotney takeover? Who have we got tonight, Jen?
We've got Mr. Michael Wardian. Hi, Mike.
I thought I should do the sound effects. Good evening, Mike. How are we doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're good. Thank you. We're good. And where are you based at the moment, Mike? Where are you calling from, or where are you? We've called you.
You've got me in Washington, D.C. So it's starting to become one of my favorite times of the year here. The famous cherry blossoms are out, and I'm looking forward to a run with them tomorrow. So yeah, it's a gorgeous city, and really lucky to get to live here.
Brilliant. And what time is it over there at the moment?
It's around 13:30, so a little bit after lunchtime. So just drove back from the ocean. So we were at the ocean for the last 4 or 5 days. It's the kids' spring break.
Cool, excellent. So spring break, so they're on school, so you're just kind of breaking up a little bit. I think we were kind of saying before we came on that broadband was obviously getting sucked by the boys, and I think we just kind of just lost a little bit there. It's kind of like a very long pause out spring break. Excellent. Okay.
That's
all right. We can hear you. It just breaks up a little.
Get the boys off Fortnite. They're too old for Fortnite now, aren't they? They'll be, and Minecraft, all that's kind of done now. They'll be on the PS4.
Hold on. I'll text them on my other phone.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, hold on.
Anyway, we should do a proper introduction for Mike, shouldn't we? How could we kind of summarize Mike Wardian? So, kind of international renowned ultra runner, marathon runner. You have your own Wikipedia page, which I think if I started reading it out would probably take us a good half hour to read through the whole Wikipedia page. You have been USA 50k champion. You have qualified for the USA Olympic trials. You ran a 2:17 marathon. Is that right on that? And you have kind of done some amazing ultra marathons. You've kind of won the 7 marathons in 7 continents, setting a world record for the kind of averaging time 2:45. Yeah, just an amazing, illustrious career you've had. And I think you've also probably won the record for kind of somebody who does the most races in a year as well. You know, we talk a lot about an ultra marathons that should only do so many a year, but you seem to be able to just...
And then I say, but Mike Wardian does this, and Marcus says, but Mike Wardian isn't human.
you must have some superhuman power. But yeah, you've done Western States, Marathon de Saab, Coastal Challenge in Costa Rica. Yeah, I just unbelievable. Yeah. Amount. It's, I mean, how did you end up getting into ultra marathons?
I got into marathons first. So when I was, it was actually weird. It was in 1994, I guess. I heard about the Boston Marathon, like through a friend, a guy named Vince Voisin. His mom Vicky had just run the Boston Marathon. And she had her little like medal and everything. And that's kind of when I decided like, hey, I want to run a marathon. It was the first like real person that I'd actually met that, you know, had run a marathon, you know, not somebody you see on TV or something, but like a real like individual. And that's when I decided, hey, I want to try to do that. And it took me a couple years to figure out like, you know, some training and they were nice enough to help me get started and ran Boston qualifying at the Marine Corps Marathon and just got hooked. And quickly thereafter, in my first year, I ran Boston. I ran Chicago Marathon, New York City Marathon, Marine Corps Marathon again, and then the JFK 50 miler, which was my first ultra marathon. So kind of jumped into ultras pretty quickly and then was like, yeah, I'm good. That was really hard. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that again for a while. And just kind of doing some Ironmans and then got back into ultra marathons doing a race called the Saab, which listeners or viewers might know, and did really well at that. And then from there, just kind of started, you know, exploring the world through running you know, started doing like, I think you and I raced on a couple of 50K, 100K world teams against each other, maybe a couple times, and started doing some of those kind of longer events and had some good success. And along the way, you know, never really decided if I wanted to be a trail runner or a road runner. I just wanted to be a runner. And so, like, I didn't, you know, shy away from any kind of surface or disciplined. And along the way, that's, you know, led me to have like a kind of a longer career than most people, I think, because, you know, I was able to stay healthy and continue to race. And what I don't think you said is I'm like a little bit older now. So I'm a 47 on April 12th. So coming up in just a couple of weeks. So it's been cool to just see the evolution of the sport through time. And then also just, myself as a runner, you know, I used to think like there's no way you could run 50 miles and then, you know, when I ran 100 miles, I was like, oh, there's no way you could run, you know, 100 miles. And then, yeah, I think, you know, a couple of years ago, I ran across a country and one of the big things I want to do is, you know, continue to evolve as an athlete. And I think that, you know, if you're open and willing, you know, that eventually will happen.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to mention your age, because we both share the same birth year. There's only a few months in between us, so I think we both look pretty reasonable for the age of you. Your beard is far more fuller and less grey than mine, but maybe it's the ultra running keeping us looking younger. So you kind of say you got into, you kind of jumped straight into the marathon. Were you doing any kind of, so at college, because we've got likes of Hayden Hawks, and Jim Walmsley, who were excelling at kind of shorter distance at college and an amazing kind of athletic careers and then have come into ultra. Were you into sport as a kid, at college? Were you into much running?
Not running on its own, but I played a sport called lacrosse. So I, ran around and, tried to knock people over at not very much weight. And then, tried to, score goals. That was basically what I did. So, I played a position called attack on lacrosse, which is like basically lazy glamour shot. It's just kind of like, you don't actually play any defense and you just kind of score goals. And so, but I was one of the faster distance runners on the team. And so like they would always joke, like, you should join the, cross country team or something. And I went to a school called Michigan State. So kind of a really big university here in the States, and played at the highest level for lacrosse, even though our team we weren't one of the top teams. We were kind of like the team at the bottom that, if in your Premier League we would probably get relegated down to the lower ranks, but it was fun to play against the top tier guys.
Brilliant. So yeah, and then the kind of marathon bug kind of took over, and you not mentioning age, but you said you've had this long journey, and it is really exciting to see how ultramarathon running has just evolved over the last kind of 20-30 years, with kind of advancement in special kit and kind of stuff like that, but also how races have just become so much more professional and just a increase in competitors in races as well. I'm sure you still get in America, there's like kind of 50 of you at a race, but then you at UTMB now, which has got thousands of thousands, and it's like a huge spectacular spectator sport. So without kind of, maybe we should this question a bit for later on in the interview, but what do you think is your success, or has been your reason why you've had this successful long career? What's been keeping you going? You said that, mixing it between the road and the trail, but is there anything else you kind of think, this is why I've been able to sustain such a long career?
I think there's a couple things. I mean, I think one of the most important things is that I think I still love it. Like, I still have a passion for it. I think that's really important, because it's so weird. Like, I came up with so many guys, and most of those people aren't running anymore. I think when, they started maybe not achieving what they wanted to do anymore, or family came, or, an injury got in the way, that they decided they wanted to spend their time elsewhere. And I've always just been really focused on, trying to, be the best athlete I can be. And I think I'm really open to trying new things. Like, a couple of years ago, I started doing way, way more strength training, and I think that's really helped. It's something that I didn't really focus on as much as I do now. I think when I've had injuries, I've been lucky in that I've only had a couple of really kind of serious injuries, but I've kind of treated those opportunities as like a chance to like reassess, what's going on and why that happened. And then try to learn from it so that I don't make the same mistake twice. Like, that being said, like I have blundered many, many times, and I'm sure I will continue to make stupid mistakes. I think that's just part of the process. And then I think I've been lucky too, in that I have been able to find support with a bunch of different brands. So I think that's really helpful too. It's allowed me to become a professional. The chance to combine all those things, I think, has led me down a path that has allowed me to kind of be the best version of myself I can be. And so, like, I feel like I've been super fortunate. And I try to treat it like a job, in that, like, I'm very diligent, and like, you got to do the work. Like, it's not a sport where if you don't do the work, you can't just like rely on somebody else. Like, you have to put the time and energy into it. And I'm willing to do that. And I think if you're willing to kind of live by those guidelines and make it a part of your life, it's unfortunate, because like a lot of sports, like when you step off the court, like there's not a lot more you can do. But like running, like when you step, you're not training, you're like recovering to be able to train again. You have to eat well, you have to, you know, do all these other things. So it is kind of like a lifestyle, and I've embraced that.
You say you've had all these amazing sponsorships that you can almost like be a pro athlete, but you also work, you do have a job. I don't know if that's a full-time job, but you do a job. And when we met in Costa Rica, I was kind of a bit, I thought you were like 100% full-time pro athlete coaching. But yeah, and you tell me your job, and I did ask you to try and explain it a few times, and I think I understood it, but
something to do with boats.
It's something to do with boats, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's actually quite popular now, because everyone's like, "Oh, you have ships that are stuck in the Suez Canal." Right?
Like, that wasn't one of yours, was it?
Yeah. No, that one wasn't, but the one right behind it was. So, like, there was a MERS ship right behind the ship that got stuck, and so, like, yeah, that's what I do. And there's a movie called Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks where a ship gets hijacked by pirates. That was actually my ship. Like, that was a ship that I represented and contracted the cargo on. So, like, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that we do. And like you're saying, yeah, I still work full time as a ship broker, and just became an owner in the company. So, like, it's been like 25 years. You know, I started as kind of like in running, like, you know, I started at the very bottom, and I've worked my way up. You know, I started answering the phones and making photocopies, and so it's cool to like have progressed along that route, and then, you know, also with the running.
And then if I could just take you back to when you were saying about your training, like, are you coached, or do you plan your training yourself, and what does that look like? Are you training 6-7 days a week?
Yeah, so I have basically always coached myself. There was a point in 2000 and 2001 where I worked with Lisa Smith Batchen, who you may know from Marathon de Saab. She was like a really awesome American woman ultra runner. But then since about that 2001, I've coached myself. So I guess for like the last 20 years. And yeah, I plan my training myself, and I'm actually coaching with a group called the Chosky Collective. So, have a couple clients that I'm working with. But I'd say I train every day in some aspect. So strength, or, I just started getting into climbing, which is funny because I'm not really good, but I still love it. And so I'm doing like running, climbing, CrossFit-y type stuff, and then I'm working with a personal trainer also, and I was doing a lot more cycling when I was commuting, but I'm not doing as much cycling now since I'm working from home.
And in terms of the running, does it vary a lot, or is there a certain mileage that you seem to sit at for your training, like weekly?
I'd say it's typically between 60 and like 110 or 120 miles a week. I just hit my biggest mileage since my injury, which I got hurt in the end of October of last year, 2020, which was a bummer because it was like my biggest year that I'd ever had, which is crazy with like COVID, like, but I was just doing like crazy stuff like every weekend. But I think I was like at 110 miles. And then the week after that, I was at like 40 miles. No. And this week, this past week, I think I was at like 80 something miles. So like it varies, but it just kind of depends on what I have going on and what I'm doing.
And is that fitting an all around work? So when you say you work full time, is that Monday to Friday, kind of 9 to 5, kind of full on Dolly Parton?
No, yeah,
don't sing.
Yeah, no, no. Unfortunately, shipping's kind of 24 hours a day. So, like, there is a set schedule, you know, like, I'm always available. So I'm answering emails at, like, 2 in the morning or whatever because, you know, we're working with people all over the world. But, yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, a typical day is, you know, 9 to 5 or 9 to 6, because, you know, a lot of our business is government business, and so we work kind of parallel to those hours. But you know, the ships are always moving, we're always kind of on call, which is awesome, but also, you know, it makes it hard sometimes to get away.
Yeah, and so what injury? Because you said you kind of alluded there, you had an injury, and I think like a lot of people, kind of, yeah, races getting cancelled last year. I mean, in the UK, we kept getting put in lockdown, so you couldn't really do much, and some people just started hitting the training a little bit too hard, and you know, we shan't jump to any conclusions there, Mike, of, you know, saying like you're doing some of your biggest volume or causing injury, but I'll try not to be the sports therapist here. But what was the injury then, and how did that kind of an impact your mental approach? Because you know, you are a really kind of positive person, a brilliant growth mindset, but how did that impact you with races being cancelled and the kind of global situation? Well, you know, how did that impact you as a runner?
Yeah, I mean, it impacts the, you know, your bottom line, of course, because, you know, there's not as much chance to earn incentives if there aren't events. But I was doing a ton of stuff outside of traditional events. So I was doing lots of fastest known times. Like, I basically did every run that I ever wanted to do in my local area, which was awesome, except like now that I don't really have any, except for like some like crazy, you know, like 250 mile runs, which you can't just do on the weekend. So
you can, you can do that, Mike.
you totally can. You're right. But like it takes, yeah, like you need like, yeah, your buddy to be able to do it. It's not like you just go out your door and I mean, you can do it unsupported or whatever, but it's a, yes, little trickier. And so I was doing tons of those. And I got hurt doing like a TV show for Spartan. Like, it's like there was a thing called the Spartan Games, and they brought together 12 men and 12 women over the course of like 4 days to do like an endurance thing to see who the fittest person in the world is. You know, that being said, you know, it was like North America, basically. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't worldwide. It was like,
felt like the World Baseball, yeah, Series.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, the baseball person, you know, wins the World Series, and it's only like American teams, right? Like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But so that was really cool. But we did events like 45 minutes swimming, open water swimming in like a, you know, a lake that was like 50 degrees, you know, or we did a 6-hour mountain bike race and a 6-hour or 8-hour mountain bike race. I don't know, a 6 or 8-hour mountain bike race, like a 6-hour run. We did the thing that I got hurt on though was like lifting boulders. Like they had these, like we had to do like the Highland Games where you're like picking up boulders and like doing like functional fitness stuff, and I lifted up like 100 pounds of thing, like, you know, 10 times over like a 4-foot wall, and I'm pretty sure that's what got me hurt. Actually, I know that's what got me hurt. Like, so like it was just like way too much weight. Like I do those exercises, but I do it with very low weights. So yeah, so it was just like peer pressure, and I totally fell for it.
How did you get on? How did you get on at everything else? Were you, how were you at the mountain biking and things?
But you must have whooped a 6-hour run.
I think I actually, so you'd be surprised, there were some really fast guys. There was like named Ryan Atkins, like a Spartan world champion, but he's also like, he qualified for like the Golden Trail Series, so like super fast. Like, yeah, he's awesome. And then there was a guy named Josiah who's like a 12 times Xterra world champion, and then there was a guy named Aaron who's just like a bad runner. So I was like fourth, but like, yeah, there was, I was,
so we needed it like 6 days.
Like the third day. So like I was, yeah, exactly. Or like started or like just not have like destroyed me. Cause I couldn't even, the problem was like, I could, well, they were better than me, but like, I also was like having breathing from all the, like the weightlifting stuff. Like, I don't know. I did something to my stomach. I was surprised. Like, they were so good.
Wow. Yeah. No, it's amazing. Like you say, so many Spartan athletes like John Albion, you know, who's won the, you know, podium at the World Trail Championships, yeah, and is an amazing sky runner. He's just seems to have that agility, yeah, to cope with that kind of terrain, just have the speed as well. You're just like, you know, like 218 marathon runner as well or something crazy like that. Yeah, yeah. Just unbelievable.
No, those guys are legit, like, those guys are legit athletes. It was really awesome to see. Plus there was like, you know, NFL players. I don't know if you show Ninja Warrior, like do the obstacles, like for real, like course thing. There was like one of those people, and like even the women were super, super, super strong, like amazing athletes, like, so awesome, like CrossFit athletes, like runners, adventure racers. It was awesome.
Brilliant. But yeah, it comes down to the mindset, isn't it? Those kind of athletes have such a different kind of mindset as well. We're doing those kind of multi-disciplines as well, where runners, we tend sometimes, yeah, just have a very kind of single mindset. There's so much else going on. So that was the October, then how long were you injured for then?
So it was actually pretty bad. So it kind of like was unfortunate timing also, because it was right before the Biggs Backyard Ultra, so that race where you run like 4 miles every hour. So I was injured from, I think, October 23rd. And I still feel like I'm still like overcoming it a little bit. Like, it was pretty bad. I had herniated some discs in my back. So, I had to kind of get the inflammation and swelling kind of, at bay, and then kind of work my body back into shape. So I still feel like I'm kind of coming back from that. But I started running again probably at the beginning of December. So about 2 months of like, you know, pretty easy, like physical therapy, but I was going like, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, like doing all the exercises and, you know, kind of working hard to get back and try to stay as fit as I could while I was hurt.
Yeah. So would you say that's probably one of the worst injuries you've had as a runner? And
oh,
almost
for
kind
sure.
of non-running related,
sure,
as well.
Oh yeah. No, it was like, I thought I had a good grasp of pain until I got that injury. Like, I was like, oh man, I know what pain feels like. And nerve pain, for everyone that like has told me about it, I was just kind of like, yeah, 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 it's whatever. And like it really increased my appreciation of what real pain feels like.
Yeah, yes. Back pain is just not pleasant. It's like proper toothache, isn't it? Which you just can't continue to escape. But it's all down the back, and yeah, anything you move. And but also just being robbed of the opportunity to be able to run must have just been kind of so frustrating as well. Or was it just kind of just switch
your
mindset?
No, especially because it was totally my fault. Like as I was doing it, I was just like, don't get hurt the whole race. And of course, like my wife was like, this is the dumbest idea. Like, Jennifer was like, you are so stupid. And then I went and got hurt like an idiot. And I was like, well, maybe I'll only get a little hurt, you know? Like, I was like, I'll just, like, maybe I'm only, like, going to be sore for a couple days. And that was not true. So, like, yeah. When, especially, like, it wasn't like I was doing something cool, you know? Like, it was an awesome event, but I wasn't, like, you know, traversing something and, like, you know, a boulder, like, you know, crashed down. And it was like, I picked up something that I knew was way too heavy because I was like full of testosterone, like an idiot. Like I was just like,
ego.
So, yeah. It was so egocentrically just stupid. I was just like, and it wasn't like I was going to win. It wasn't, you know what I mean? Like if I was going to win, you know, then yeah, maybe it would have been like, I was in last place. Like it was just dumb.
And Jennifer, you know, you briefly mentioned your wife, Jennifer. I mean, Jennifer's been so supportive of your running, hasn't she? I mean, you know, you guys have been around the world together with family when we met in Costa Rica. You had Jennifer and your boys with you there. You know, yeah, she's been such an amazing level of support for you. And, you know, like you're saying about, you know, that illustrious career you've had, it just makes such a difference, isn't it, being in that relationship where it's everything so supportive. So yeah, when she's saying this is a stupid idea, come on Mike, you maybe should have kind of gone.
She'll usually say that and be like, okay, but it's cool, just do it. And that's exactly what she said. She's like, okay, you know, whatever, go for it, see how it goes. But then, and she never was like, oh, I told you so. She was like, oh, I'm so sorry you got hurt. But like, I was like, you were so right. Like, I was a complete idiot. Why did I do that? You know? And it's one of those things. Like, the great thing about it is like, I learn from it. Like, I learned, like, hey, like, I was so pumped. Like, I did way more weight than I ever thought I could do. So, like, I learned that I can do way more than I thought I could. But I also, like, learned what, like, I shouldn't do, like, 10x what I've been doing. Maybe 2x is okay.
But that's kind of a little bit of the ultra runner mentality talking there, isn't it? In some respects, it's always a kind of finding that limit, kind of going, right, can I go further? Can I go faster? You know, which,
right,
you know, you're renowned for doing, you know, like running a 2:17 marathon. You know, it's that's a pretty quick marathon to be self-coaching that, and then to then go into the ultra marathons and some of the challenges you've done. So yeah, you've definitely got that mentality to go, yeah, let's just push it and see what happens. Somebody's on YouTube, ask us Auntie Fee Gwen, can you ask questions? Just fire questions in and we'll kind of feed the questions. And somebody did ask about Barclay, talking about crazy. I mean, we're talking about Spartan, this kind of TV program being pretty crazy, but you have probably done one of the most craziest races in the world or in America. Tim Brenny asked, did you do Barclay this year? And will you try again?
Yeah, so I did not do it this year, especially being injured. Like, that's a race where you basically have to like be in the best shape of your life. And I didn't want up if I wasn't gonna, you know, give it my best effort, you know. And so, like, there's no point to the spot. It's just not fair to the other people, like, because there's only, like, he only lets in like 40 people. So, like, if you're going there and you're not prepared to, like, do your absolute best, you should just not go, because you're robbing someone else of their chance to participate. And so, like, I just didn't go. And I've done it twice. So I think I did it in 2017 and 2018. Both times I completely sucked. I got lost the first time, basically right after the first book. So for those people in your audience that don't know, you have to like run around in the woods and it's like not marked and you have to find these books and they kind of correspond to your bib number. So like if you're bib number 30, you have to go to the book and like rip out page 30. So like I got to the first book with like everybody in the race, basically, because it's not very far and it was slow. And then everybody just went like, and I got lost, and I'm proceeded to be lost for like the next like 6 hours. And then the second year I got to that exact same spot again, because like he does move stuff around, but it's kind of like, it's kind of in the same area. So I got to that same spot again and I was like, oh no, that's the wrong way. And then I went I found the right trail, but I just went the wrong way on it. So like I went up the wrong mountain. And so then I was behind like the whole race. The cool thing about Barclay is you can make a couple mistakes, but if you can, it's kind of like, if you ever read those survival books or like how people die, it's not like one bad mistake that kills people. It's like continually making bad mistakes that kills people. You know, it's like, oh, that's the tree, I'm sure that's the tree, and of course it's not the tree. But like that's kind of how it is at Barclay. It's like you make one bad mistake and then you're like, oh, now I gotta go faster to get back to where I got lost. And then, you know, you just end up like blowing past where you need to be. And but yeah, I'd love to go back again when it works out, like timing wise. And as I consider him a good friend. Like, he's a just a cool dude. He comes up with like crazy ideas, and I think challenges people better. And I'd say both times I sucked at Barkley, but both times I became a better athlete. Like, I became more self-resilient. I became like much better at handling myself on long periods of time without any where I'm going, with limited supplies. And so, yeah, I sucked, but you know, if the point is to like finish the race, I failed. But if the point's to become a better athlete, then I'd say it was a big success.
And in terms of those two races, is it something that just comes with experience of being able to find your way a bit further, or is that something you can work on in terms of navigation? Because we've heard that they're a bit, they're not the most detailed maps that you get for the Barclays.
Oh yeah, it's not detailed at all. And it's like a topo map. So like, yeah, I mean, if you're a good navigator, there's definitely, I definitely could improve on navigating, but it's also like knowing what you're looking for when you're there, you know, the direction. And plus you have to carry these like crazy directions that are like, you know, go to the lily of the valley and turn, you know, at the dead oak tree in the middle of the woods. And you're like, well, there's like a 50 dead oak tree. And I have lily of the valley looks like. And so like, I think I consider it like, I don't know if you guys have this. We have like a fraternity system here in the US, and like when you're like up pledging, you know, you're at the very bottom level. Like, it's kind of like that. You have to put your time in on the course and, you know, with the ethos of the race. And then if you continually do that, then you figure out like the little nuances, and that really helps.
So do you need to go and spend time on the course? Because like John Kelly, who's one, he's based near there, isn't he? So he kind of has probably been running around that forest and woodland quite a bit. So he knows it quite well. Do you need to go and spend some time in the forest to...
Well, that's the other thing. So you're not allowed to practice on the course, but you can spend time in the park. So like, you can spend time on the trails in the park. Yeah. And just knowing where the trails are in the park is helpful. So if you're like, okay, I'm halfway up the, you know, Candy Stripe Trail or whatever, you know, then that's actually really helpful. So yeah, that is helpful. It's weird because I trained with John before the first time I went, because he lived in D.C. for a while. And I think he's over in the U.K. now with you guys doing, yeah, like awesome stuff. But like, yeah, oh, and he did the FKT that you told me about when we were in
I tried, Mike. I was trying to get you to come and do the Pennine Way.
That dude like beat him like 2 days later.
Yeah, Damien Hall, that could have been you. Yeah, then, Mike.
Oh my god, I was so excited for those guys.
That was so funny. Awesome. I was like on a bus telling you all about the bogs on the Pennine Way, trying to get you to come and do it.
It's still there.
I wish I was.
Yeah, come on. You can annoy Damo and get his record.
Yeah, those guys are so solid though, man. I'm sure that's a stout record.
And when I told you about it, you were like, well, I've always wanted to go to Scotland, so I could just run there.
Yeah, I gotta watch their movie about it. It looks really good. I haven't got a chance to see it yet.
Yeah, and Damo's got a book coming out about it shortly as well.
Yeah, he
has. In June. Oh, nice. Okay.
So we'll probably have him on chatting about some. Oh, I think I may have let slip what's going to be happening about our the official end of the Scotland there. But interesting, you say. I mean, it's fabulous to hear you kind of saying, like, you know, as a runner, you know, like we're saying, we're edging closer towards our 50s as athletes ourselves. But doing something like the Barclay, that, you know, you're still learning so much about, you know, it's not like, but this is how I've always done something, you know, that experience, that failure at Barclay kind of still was able to teach you so much and kind of help you to evolve as a runner. Have you always done that on every race? Because have you had many DNFs or failures in races?
No, I haven't. I've had less than 10, I think, in my entire career. So, I'd say, I've always learned from them. And I was actually going to say about Barkley, like, it was awesome. It actually paid dividends in 2020. I did a self-supported 115-mile run across Shenandoah National Park completely, like, my buddy dropped me off at the bottom, and I just ran basically 115 miles by myself. But I would, like, have never even had tried that had I not gone to Barkley and be like, I can probably take care of myself for 36 hours. Like, there's no way, like, before ever thought, like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'll just go in bear-infested woods and, like, with just a backpack on and like, okay, happens. And, like, so, like, it's just made, more able to handle myself. And even last year, I won, like, this crazy, like, backyard race where I ran, like, 260 miles kind of, over the course of 63 hours. And that wouldn't have been possible had I not gone to Barkley and known that, yeah, there's a lot more in me than I think there is. So, like, I think that if you can, even if you don't, I feel like sometimes, and I feel like this is so cliche to say, but sometimes you learn more when you fail than you do when you succeed. Because when you succeed, it was just kind of like, well, maybe I could go faster or something, but I won or whatever. So, it worked out. But, like, it's when you have those setbacks where you're like, I wonder why that happened. And then you can get better from it. I'd say in Barkley, there were some things that I did really poorly, but I packed the right stuff. Like, when there was, like, this ice storm came in and I thought I was going to die huddled in a cave. Like, I was like, well, I'm glad that I made myself carry this stupid emergency blanket. And, like, I was like, holy crap, like, I know how to use my compass, like, to get back to camp. And, like, all these, like, little things where you're like, I'm pretty good. Like, I was, like, freezing to death, and, like, I made myself, like, put on my, like, long underwear and everything, or else I would be, like, dead on a heap on the top of a mountain. And so, like, those are the little things where you're like, I don't want to take off my jacket, but if you don't, you're going to die, and it's like, okay, these are the things that actually are really useful if you're out there by yourself.
Brilliant. Yeah. And kind of talking about that involvement, I don't know if this is your aunt, but Aunt Teefy on YouTube asked us, so they would like to know how your running style / gait has evolved. And was it for efficiency? So maybe we should go back and look at some photos from 2000 when you did your first marathon. Have you kind of played around? Because there is a moment, like, especially in the UK, so there's, like, Running Reborn, Shane Benzie, which I think is doing some stuff in America as well, kind of talking about being an elastic runner, being efficient. Have you played around with your running technique? Have you worked with any kind of running kind of technique coaches? Have you analyzed it and thinking, actually, I can move better?
Well, somebody analyzed me when I was doing the first Carbon X, and they were showing, like, Jim Walmsley, and, like, they're look how awesome Walmsley's running, and then they put a picture of me, and they're like, look how crappy this guy's running. So, like, I'd say based on that data, my running form is probably crap right now, but I haven't done anything lately with anyone, and that was, like, a couple weeks after I just run across Israel. And so I think my running form, what I've learned is, it depends what you're trying to achieve, right? Like, if you're looking to run a fast 5K, like, you probably don't want to do, like, the ultra shuffle, right? But if you're trying to run for 63 straight hours, then you barely want to pick up your feet, and you want to be as efficient as you can be. So, like, I think it depends. And if you're going up the side of a mountain, like, taking short steps and really leaning on your poles, like, I've learned to use poles over the last, 10 years. I used to think they were, like, cheater sticks or, like, whatever, but, like, if the race allows them, like, I'm all about using them, because it's just another point of contact. And so, like, I think adapting to what you're trying to do, like, I've totally done that. I'd say my form seems like it's pretty good, but it actually, maybe I should go get it checked. Like, that's a good question.
Maybe Aunt Teefy's seen you running and saying, like, come on, Mike,
She's probably like, dude, that guy needs to actually pick his feet up.
need to go and be Running Reborn by Shane Menzi. Like, come on, look at Walmsley at 100K. Come on.
To this conversation. You know, like, I'm going to PR and I'll be like, oh my God, it was because of that podcast we did.
Not just because of Carbon X.
Yeah, exactly. In
the shoes. Can we have a word with Jim? Give Jim a quick call afterwards and go, hey, Jim, how can I get my...
can I be like you?
Yeah, how can I get my feet a bit up?
It's funny you say that, because the first time I met him, it was at a race called the JFK 50 miler, and I had won it before, and like it was my, like I said, it was like my first race, and like we're going up the first big climb, and it's like super steep, it's like within the first like 1 or 2 miles, and I see this guy and he's like loping up the trail. I was like, oh, that guy's gonna conk out, man. I'm gonna catch him in like 10 miles. Like, he's gonna be so done. And then, of course, I find out it's Jim Walmsley, and he crushed us all by like half an hour. And I was like, oh, I guess not.
Excellent. You kind of briefly touched about kind of FKTs. So, saying a couple of years ago, I don't know if you kept under wraps, but I still remember Ian Corliss mentioning it on social media. You ran across Israel.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
No, we didn't keep it under wraps at all. Like, we were doing like daily recaps and like Ian
but,
was
yeah,
there
but leading up to but leading up to it, there wasn't much going on about
it,
was
it? Yeah. Yeah. No, well, we weren't really sure if it was going to happen or not. It was actually Zoli, the guy that was at the Coastal Challenge when you were there, I think. He was trying to, I think, get anyone to do it. And I was like, I'll do it. it was probably like one of the best experiences of my life. Like, Zoli was awesome. The people of Israel are some of the nicest, most genuinely cool people I've ever met. And the country is like, for such a small country, it has so much diversity and like just awesomeness. Like, it's just completely beautiful. You have like ocean, mountains, there's like snow there. Like, it was just unexpectedly cool. Like, I was blown away, and it's one of those experiences that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And of course, like, the hummus there is like, made me like completely like ridiculously like spoiled. Like, I love that stuff.
And how long was the route?
So the route was a little over 1,000 kilometers, so a little over 600 miles, and the record previously was, I think, around 15 days, and we wanted to try to go under 10 days, and I was just a little bit over 10 days. So I think I was 10 days, 16 hours or something, so a little bit over like 100K a day or so.
There were some restrictions, though, wasn't there? I think I remember from the podcast, so that you couldn't actually run for some of the time.
Yeah, because you had different diversions as well.
You couldn't run at night in the national park.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're not. Yeah, that's actually tricky. True, and was it wasn't a problem a lot of the time, but it became a problem towards the end. There was a park that, it was so funny, we only had to go like 5K through this park, and we got there at dusk and they wouldn't let us cross in. And then there was another day where they were this is Israel, but they were doing like tank practice on the trail, and so they were shooting munitions, and so they were like, yeah, you guys can't start. So yeah, there were some restrictions, but like everyone that's run the trail has those same kind of challenges. Also, like, they got like epic like rain for the first time in like, I don't know, ever. And so like there was flooding, and all the parts that were supposed to be easy were just like mud pits. So it was super slow. So it's, you know, it should have been like 100K of like easy buffed out trails, and it was just a mud pits.
Wow. Yeah, sounds typical kind of Mike Walsh challenge going on.
I love the podcast with Ian Corliss, and Ian Corliss is like saying about all this kind of how awful it was, how dangerous, how all these cliffs, and you were like, yeah, that was a great section. Yeah. I think he was trying to crew you and take photos and didn't find it quite so amusing.
and he's just such a badass. I mean, I think you guys know him, but like, he's like running with us like with like 15 pounds of like super expensive, like, you know, camera equipment, and like, it's, yeah, if you fall, you're dying. Like, you're totally dead. It's like you're dead, and he's like hold on, let me go to the edge and snap this awesome picture. And I'm like, all right, man. Or he's like running backwards over like rocks. Like, yeah, he's a stud, man. It was incredible. Like that was, yeah, he's one of those guys. Like I, you know, done a lot of stuff with him, and you know, you guys know him too from like the Coastal Challenge and just being a part of the community, and like, but I got a real good sense of like just what a completely genuine person he is. Like, you know, when you're living with someone in that kind of tight quarters for 10 days, like, you get a whole another appreciation of just how awesome they are.
Yeah. I mean, he takes some amazing photos, but he's a great guy as well, and has such a passion for the sport, and takes himself to kind of limits to get a certain photo and to help other people out. So on the Wild Ginger Facebook patron group, we did have a question about kind of FKTs. So we just mentioned there about the Israel one. And at the moment, FKT is a bit of a kind of the buzzword in last year with races being cancelled. We talked there about kind of John and Damien doing the Pennine Way, and you were talking about doing that 136-mile FKT on your own. But Emma Morton from our Facebook group has kind of asked a question, if you have any more FKTs planned. Is there anything in the, on the bucket list or anything in the pipeline which you kind of, you know, you're able to share with us, or are you just going to continue to of harp about one which we kind of keep hearing about?
Yeah, well, the big one is I want to, and I was joking with you guys before we were talking, but I feel like Chicken Little, but like I want to run across the United States. So that's like the big one that I want to go for. And if everything goes right, like I was, like the record is really stout. It's a guy named Pete Kostelnik. It's like 42 days. So it's like 70 miles a day. But I'd like to, if I can get my fitness back and get the support that I'm looking for, I'd like to try to go for that record now. And that, you know, that's like not just like people to support me, but I also have to like figure out work and everything. And then I've got like some other ones locally that I want to do. Like I want to run from Washington, D.C. to the beach, which is about 130 or 230 miles, depending on which way you go. So that's kind of that's one of the things I want to do. Then there's all these forts in D.C. So I want to run like to all the forts that circle Washington, D.C. And then there's also, I don't know, you guys know the Washington Monument? I guess you probably do, right? Like it's like the obelisk. There's one in Baltimore, which is about 50 miles away. And then there's one out in Shenandoah National Park. So I thought it'd be cool to like run from Baltimore to D.C. to Shenandoah. That would be about 100 miles. So I've got some
what about abroad? What about the Pennine Way in the UK?
You missed your chance with that, Mike.
I don't know,
I'd like to do I think there's one that I've always wanted to do ever since, you know, probably like 2007 2008. I heard about the West Highland Way and I just thought like that one looks like really cool. And I had a friend named Jess Bragg who has done that one. And he was telling me how cool it is. I don't think his record stands anymore, though. I think someone beat it, maybe.
I think Paul Giblin. No, somebody beat Paul Giblin's record, didn't they?
James Stewart, but I don't know if that's true. No.
It's
a fast race. It's just been called off, actually. That was due to be this June. But I don't know if that's been called off or postponed. But yeah,
the race has just been cancelled. And Chloe Mason... He's got a question as well about marathon running, which we'll come on to before we finish. Is about
you've answered that. Yeah, it's about running across America. So we had Mimi Anderson on a few weeks ago. She's got a new book, Limitless, which is about her attempt to run across America, get the record, and ultimately she didn't manage it. But I mean, it sounded such a huge undertaking. She came out to America. She had recces in the car, like she drove the route. She had support for a lot of support, vans, everybody had taken time off work. Huge, isn't it? I mean, is this been something that's taking years in the planning? This is definitely not something that you can just go and do the next weekend.
I mean, you got to decide like what route you're gonna do. I've I've been talking about it for years, and then also, like, you have to be mentally up for it. Like, it's like running across Israel, like, knocked me out for like 6 or 8 months. I just kind of felt like blah, you know. And like, everyone I know that's run across the U.S. or kind of like one of those big undertakings, like, yeah, you're gonna be a changed person when you're done with it. Like, you're gonna, you know, not be the athlete you were before. It's gonna take everything that you, you know, possess to do it. So, like, you know, mentally you got to be like, okay, I'm going all in on this, and like, that means like I might not be able to do all the things I like to do. So, like, you know, I have to be comfortable with what that means, and you know, and then, you know, finding, like, I was hoping last year that my dad could help me, and then COVID, it was like, I'm not going to put, you know, people in jeopardy so that I can, you know, have this adventure, you know? So, like, you know, I want to make sure that it's safe for the people that are helping me, and that, you know, we are also, you know, doing in a way, like, I wanted to actually, like, experience it. And I figured, like, during COVID, just going to end up in, like, gas station, you know, like, and like, those people aren't going to be stoked to see me coming in there all sweaty and gross. And like, like, you know, like, I want to have an experience where I get a chance to learn the country in a deeper way, but also, like, I want to learn about myself and what it means to, like, I know what it feels like to run for 10 days, like, but I can't even imagine what it's like to run those type of distances for 30 or 40 days. Like what does that do to your body and, like, your mind? And so I'm really excited about what that means, but also, like, it's kind of a big thing, you know?
Yeah. Cause in Mimi's book, she talks about, like, she couldn't run after that. She was taking up cycling and learning to adapt. Like, so it is almost like you're risking everything, aren't you, for that record?
Yeah. But then, I mean, my friend Pete, he's come back and he's done some other, like, incredible things. And I know he's got, you know, more things that he's looking forward to doing. So, you know, I think it'll be awesome. I just, you know, I want to make sure that I do it in the best possible way.
Yeah. And having that kind of understanding that you need that bit of time off afterwards to give the body time to recover. Not, were you still going to your fast mile? Because one of the things,
I'm sure you told me this tip, Mike. Best recovery for a 100-mile race is just go out the next day and run a mile as fast as you can.
It's true. I can barely walk a mile
the next day.
it's as fast as you can go, though. So if you can only walk, then
that counts.
Yeah, I recommend it, though. If anyone, like, just give it a try. If it doesn't work, like, okay, fine. But, like, for me, it really, really helps.
You said, like, it just flushes everything out. It's great. I'm like...
Yeah, except I swear, you'll feel like your blood is lava. Like, it'll feel like you actually have lava coming through your blood. But you'll feel so much better afterwards.
Is this scientifically proven, or is this just the Mike Wardian school of running?
It's an experiment of one, man. It's an experiment of one. But I actually have had people say, like, oh, I've tried that. It worked. So, I mean, you know, maybe it is only, completely bizarre people. But it doesn't have to be 100 miles. You can do it after 50 miles or even a marathon. I had somebody that I'm training. Like, they're getting ready for the marathon and they're super fit. So last week they ran 27 miles and he's like, why 27? I'm like, because, man, you can just go that extra mile. And then the next day he did like 4 miles and he was like, oh my God, that felt so good. So, like, yeah, it's totally.
We've had a question about marathon tips. I'm not sure whether they're really going to take you seriously now, but it says, Chloe's asked us a question before. She said, what tips do you have for finishing strongly in the last third of a marathon? She's done 7 marathons and can say that she doesn't get the theory of faster splits as you progress through the miles. So any tips for pacing a marathon for Chloe?
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, ideally, like, you want to finish faster than you start. But, I mean, that's pretty easy if you start super slow, right? But if you're trying to run your best race, I tend to, like, think of it like, I think she's right, thinking of it as thirds, right? So like the first like 6 or 7 miles is kind of just getting in comfortable. I feel like most of the work is actually in that second bit. Like I always try to own the miles from like 13 to 20 because no one wants to run those miles, because those are the miles like that aren't sexy. You're not close, but you're far enough in the race where it's actually like a lot of work, and no, like you're not like near the finish line unless it's like on a track or something. No one's seeing you doing that work. You're out. Like most races, like the halfway point is completely like empty, like unless it's like Boston or New York or one of the, you know, or London, I guess. But like even still, like you're far enough from the finish where like, wow, this is, it's not close. So that's the, those are the miles to focus on. And if you can get to like 22, 23 miles, then I just break it in and I'm like, all I got to do is a 5K. So that's kind of how I break it down. And then I'm like, okay, just do a 5K, just do a 5K, maybe 2 minutes slower than your PR and you'll crush. Like, and so that's how I try to break it down in my head. And then I also try to eat. Like, I think a lot of people are like, oh, I need to eat at 8 miles. I try to eat at the very beginning. So like I take a gel every 4 miles, which seems like a lot, cause that's like 6 gels mm-hmm. over the course of a marathon. Like, and then if you can get liquids, fine. But I usually take, you know, it's a goo. So I use goo Roctane. And by the time I get to the end, I'm like all jittery and stuff, but I'm also like super ready to, you know, to hammer. So like, cause you've built up the calories as you're going. And I don't know about you, but like you definitely feel like you get a little bit of a surge from the crowd as you get towards the finish line. And then, so like if you can really own those and really practice those, you know, mile 13 to mile 20, I think those are the miles where, if you can hold pace or even just get a little bit quicker, like, and what's crazy, and your fans probably know this, is like 1 or 2 seconds a mile, that's like a minute. So like over the course of a marathon, like that's all you got to do is just get a second faster, or 2 seconds faster, really, and you've cut a minute off your time. So like, and that, you know, that being said, like if you're at your max, like a second, like if someone gave me $1 million, I couldn't go a second faster, right? But like, but a lot of times you can find efficiency, and then like take advantage of all the things that you can be efficient at, though, like the water stops. Like as you're coming into the water stop, start yelling out what you want before you get there. So like, I want water, 2 waters. I mean, Marcus has been around me enough to know I'm freaking annoying when I come into like an aid station. I start like yelling, like, you know, 100 meters out, like, water, you. And I'll actually like point out somebody and I'll be like, you in the red hat, I want 2 waters, right hand. And like, At first I used to be like, oh, that's a jerk thing to do. But like, I've actually volunteered, and I'd much rather someone yell at me and tell me what they want than come in and be like, I don't know, you tell me, what do you want? Like, I'll be like, you want a cookie? And they'll be like, I don't want that. Why would you give me that? You know? And so like, it's nice that, you know, they want to help you, make it easy for them to help you, and then be a super efficient. Don't spend any, especially in a marathon where you're not going up a mountain, right? Like if it's a road marathon, just get what you need and don't even slow down and get out of there. And then don't throw it on the person behind you. Look around before you ditch it. And if you can, throw it in the trash can. It just makes it easier for everyone. But like, you know, don't throw your bottle in the middle of the street, because you know, someone else is going to be coming after you usually.
Great.
Those are my best tips. Also, lay your stuff out the night before.
Oh, so you can get a flat lay for Instagram.
Well, yeah, I started doing it for Instagram, but then I realized like, oh, I don't forget my shoes anymore. So like, it's
have you ever forgotten your shoes for a race? Is this
I forgot my shoes for a half marathon. I went in sandals and I forgot my shoes, and I saw my friend in the parking lot. And I was like, dude, I forgot my shoes and socks. And he's like, you can have my shoes, but if you win, you got to split it with me. And I was like, okay, fine.
And did you win?
I had to split it. I think I did win, and I had bloody ass feet.
Maybe that's the efficiency and the form question.
Yeah, that sounds like one of the nightmares I have, you know, like anxiety pre-race dreams I have where I've turned up to the race and I've not got the kind of
Marcus would have his laid out like 3 weeks before. Yeah. In a spreadsheet, weighed.
Always a spreadsheet. No, I mean, we've been chatting for an hour already, Mike. We've kind of gone past 7:30 and we've not even kind of got on properly about the 7 marathons and 7 continents, some of the world records and other races you've kind of done. We could have spent hours with you again this evening, Mike. Look, thank you so much for taking the time out this afternoon
no worries
to come and chat to us.
Thanks so much, it's been wonderful.
It's been good to catch up with you, and we hope the injury continues to clear up and that you get back to full training. And you know, if you're interested in following Mike, you're really active on Instagram, aren't you? Kind of share lots of stuff. What's happening on Instagram? You share part of what your diet is like. You share your strength work you're doing. You really kind of give people a good insight into what Mike Wardy, the athlete, is getting up to. So if people are interested in finding out more about you, you can head over to Instagram. And you've got your own website, or where people can kind of get in touch, because you do a bit coaching.
It's super like janky right now. It's like super dated website, but most people are, I figure, on social media. So like if you go to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, I'm on all those platforms. But I do, it's just Mike Wardian, and it's WARD like dog, IAN. Totally follow me there, and I post all that kind of stuff. And sorry, I'm super loquacious, man. We need like a 2-hour block rather than a 1-hour block.
Hey, but
we'll have a part two.
Yeah, we'll maybe get you on when you start doing those FKTs again and kind of got more stories to be talking about.
So, that'd be awesome.
We're going to say cheerio. Hang on the line for us for a little bit. We'll have a proper cheerio once we've said goodbye to everybody. But thank you, Mike, for joining us this evening, this afternoon.
Guys.
Catch you later.
Bye.
Brilliant. Oh, wow. Fantastic. Well, here we go. The amazing, wonderful Mike Wardian. And we hope you've enjoyed our kind of live chat. If you're listening to us on the podcast and taking us out for a run, please leave a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. If you've been watching us on YouTube and you enjoyed it, click the subscribe button to keep in touch with what's happening on the channel, or give us a thumbs up. If you want to share anything, what you've heard about tonight, if you've maybe tried a fast mile
after
100 mile or 50 mile race, let us know down below. And as we mentioned before, this is our last official kind of takeover of Wild Ginger Running. Well, Claire's been on maternity leave, and so is this our farewell? Is this our kind of final?
Sure, actually, I think there might be some more coming.
Yeah, you might not be getting rid of us as easily as maybe you hope. We will be back in 2 weeks' time. We're going to be kind of going part time, aren't we?
Yeah, part time.
Unless you vote otherwise.
No, part
time. We're going to be doing it part time. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Claire should be here next Wednesday. I don't know who she's got booked in, but she'll let you know. So keep an eye on the channel. Click the subscribe button, keep updated. We hope you had a good evening. Have a good Easter and stay safe, everybody.
Bye.
Look yourself after you. Take care.
Hi, it's Claire here. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. These live chats take place every Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. UK time on Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel. And the link is in the show notes. I just wanted to let you know that you can find this and loads more advice and inspiration and gear tests all about trail and ultra running on my YouTube channel, Wild Ginger Running. There are training tips, advice from elite athletes, top coaches, nutritious recipes, key exercises, injury prevention information, and tons of trail kit reviewed, from running packs to poles, waterproofs to head torches, GPS watches, and shoes. And did I mention shoes? I've been going for a few years now, so there's a huge archive of content to help you out with your trail and ultra running. To quickly and easily find the information you need, simply type your query into the Google search box and then write Wild Ginger Running after it. Then Google will show you whatever blog posts or films I have on that topic. Give it a try. And if you appreciate listening and all the information I share on YouTube, you're also very welcome to support me on Patreon, which gets you some additional excellent perks and the chance to win some awesome prizes. For as little as the price of a cup of coffee every month, patrons get discounts, extra films, access to the exclusive Facebook and Strava groups, the chance to ask questions to every live chat guest, plus automatic entry into my monthly competition to win £400 worth of trail and ultra running gear. There are only about 150 patrons, so the odds on a win are way better than the lottery. Interested? Find me at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Thanks for listening, guys. Have fun, enjoy your run, and I'll see you on the trails.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.